This is Audible.
A PDF of additional materials accompanies this program. Simon & Schuster Audio presents All You Need to Know About the Music Business, 10th Edition, by Donald S. Passman, read by Fred Sanders. Important: the materials in this book represent the opinions of the author and may not be applicable to all situations. Many circumstances appear similar, but differ in respects that may be legally significant. In addition, laws and customs change over time, and by necessity of the lapse in time between the writing and printing of this book, some aspects may be out of date, even upon first publication. Accordingly, the author and publishers assume no responsibility for actions taken by listeners based upon the advice offered in this book. Each listener should use caution in applying any material contained in this book to his or her specific circumstance, and should seek the advice of an appropriate professional. Author's note: use your common sense and be careful. Did you know that most record deals don't require the record company even to make a record, much less to release it? You don't have to register in Washington to get a copyright? If we write a song together, and you write only the lyrics and I write only the music, each of us owns a piece of the music and each of us owns a piece of the lyrics, and that neither of us can use just the music or just the lyrics without paying the other? Prior to 1972, the United States had no copyright law prohibiting the unauthorized reproduction of records. Some film music composers can't even write music, much less create the arrangements for each instrument of an orchestra. A brain surgeon and a rock star have something in common? To my precious Shauna and our growing family, Danny, Soundis, David, Rona, Josh, Lindsay, Jordan, Dorianne, Benjamin, Talia, Billy, Noah, and Leo. Chapter 1: First Steps. State of the Union. This 10th edition is the most extensive rewrite of my book since the first edition. That's because the music industry has changed more radically in the last few years than at any other time in its history. Let me explain. Since the 1890s, music has been monetized by selling something: wax cylinders, piano rolls, shellac records, vinyl records, cassettes, CDs, and cheesy merchandise. Well, I guess we're still doing that. But the business is no longer based primarily on sales. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube, and similar services have revolutionized how people consume music, so that streaming is now the dominant revenue source for recorded music. And this change is way more drastic than you might think. Consider this. 1. In the past, when record sales were the mainstay of the recorded music business, you could go to a record store and buy two or three records at a time. Today, you can only stream one song at a time. That may not seem like a big deal, but 2. In the days of sales, an artist was paid the same money for each record sold, regardless of whether a buyer listened to it 1,000 times or never took it out of the shrink wrap and used it as a doorstop. But today, the more listens you have, the more money you make. However, 3. In the old days, if my record sold big numbers, it didn't make any difference to the number of sales you had. Your fans would buy your albums, and my fans would buy mine. In fact, if you had a big seller, it would bring a lot of people into record stores, and that increased the chances of selling my records. But in the streaming world, that's no longer true. For reasons we'll discuss later, the more listens you get, the less money I make. A truly radical change. The good news is that, after 15 years of music revenue falling like buckets of rocks, we had our first earnings increase in 2016. And every year after that, we've had double-digit growth. All because of streaming. We still have a ways to go. At the time of this writing, the recorded music business is less than 60% of what it was at its peak in 1999. but I predict it's going to be bigger than it's ever been in history. Why? In 1999, the historical peak of the music biz, an average CD buyer spent about $40 to $50 per year on CDs. Let's call it $45. Today, with subscriptions priced at $10 per month, the average per-subscriber fee is about $7 because of student and family discounts. So let's use $7 per month, which means a music fan spends about $84 per year. That's almost double the $45 of CD purchases we got from each fan in the good old days. On top of that, the number of subscribers is growing all over the world. But wait, there's more. In the heyday of the music biz, the average CD buyer stopped going to record stores or even listening to much music in their early 20s. Today, people of all ages subscribe to streaming services. Oldsters listen to Lawrence Welk, and youngsters want stuff like Baby Shark, a song that can mercilessly eat your brain. Which means streaming is not only generating more money per user, the $84 versus $45 in the aforementioned example, but it's also bringing in a wider range of consumers than ever before. How can the industry not be bigger than ever? Another radical shift in the last few years is how the concept of an album is being challenged. What does an album mean in the streaming age, when you can listen to just the tracks you like? Why should artists even bother to make albums when they can release individual songs as soon as they're ready? And if albums go away, what does that mean for recording contracts that have been based on the delivery and release of albums? For example, if your contract requires you to deliver 3 albums, but nobody wants albums anymore, how do you ever finish the deal? And that's just a taste of what's new in this edition. There's also an update of all the current industry figures, a new section on the recent copyright infringement cases, an overview of the Music Modernization Act, and much, much more, all waiting for you just inside the tent. So, step right up, folks, and let me show you how the music business is shifting around like a Rubik's Cube. Open up and say, ah. For many years, I taught a class on the music business at the University of Southern California Law School's Advanced Professional Program. The class was for lawyers, accountants, record and film company executives, managers, agents, and bartenders who want to manage groups. Anyway, at the beginning of one of these courses, a friend of mine came up to me. She was an executive at a film studio and was taking the class to understand the music biz as it relates to films. She said, "I'm here to open up the top of my head and have you pour in the music business." I loved that mental picture, because there's a lot of stuff I'd love to absorb that way, and it spurred me to develop a painless way of infusing you with the extensive materials in this book. So if you'll sit back, relax, and open up your mind, I'll pour in all you need to know about the music business, and a little more for good measure. How I got started. I really love what I do. I've been practicing music law for over 30 years, and I represent recording artists, songwriters, producers, music publishers, film music composers, industry executives, record companies, film companies, managers, agents, business managers, and other assorted mutants that populate the biz. I got into this gig on purpose, because I've always loved creative arts. My first showbiz experience was in grade school, performing magic tricks for assemblies. I also started playing accordion in grade school. I used to play a mean accordion. Everyone applauded when I shook the bellows on Lady of Spain. I gave it up because I found it impossible to romance a girl while wearing an accordion. In high school, I graduated from accordion to guitar, and in college at the University of Texas, I played lead guitar in a band called Oedipus and the Mothers. While I was with Oedipus, we recorded a demo that I tried to sell to our family friend, Snuff Garrett. More about him later. Snuff, a powerful record producer, very kindly took the time to meet with me. That meeting was a major turning point in my life. Snuff listened to the record, smiled, and said, "Don, go to law school." So I took Snuff's advice and went to Harvard Law School. While I was there, I played guitar with a band called The Rhythm Method. But it was quickly becoming clear that my ability to be in the music business and eat regularly lay along the business path. When I graduated, I first did tax planning for entertainers. Tax law, like intricate puzzles, was a lot of fun. But when I discovered there was such a thing as music law, the electricity really turned on. In fact, I took the USC class that I later taught, and it got me so excited that I left the tax practice for my current firm. Doing music law was so much fun that it wasn't even like working. I'm still not over that feeling. And I enjoyed it so much that I felt guilty getting paid. I got over that. My first entertainment law experience was representing a gorgeous 6-foot model, referred to me by my dentist. I promised him I would return the favor, since most of my clients had teeth. The model was being pursued, I suspect in every way, by a manager who wanted a contract for 50% of her gross earnings for 10 years. You'll see how absurd this is when you get to Chapter 3. Even then, I knew this wasn't right, so I nervously called up the guy to negotiate. I still remember my voice cracking as I said his proposal was over the industry standard, since most managers took only 15%, which was true. He retorted with, "Oh yeah? Who?" Well, he had me. I wasn't sure what managers did, much less who they were. So I learned my first lesson in the art of humility. As I began to really understand how the music business worked, I found that my love of both creative arts and business allowed me to move between the two worlds and help them relate to each other. The marriage of art and commerce has always fascinated me. They can't exist without each other. Yet the concept of creative freedom and the need to control costs in order to have a business are eternally locked in a Vulcan death match, which means the music business will always need lawyers. Anyway, I now channel my creative energies into innovative business deals, and I satisfy my need to perform by teaching, lecturing, and playing guitar. Just to be sure I don't get too straight, however, I cycle through my weird assortment of hobbies: magic, ham radio, weightlifting, guitar, dog training, 5-string banjo, karate, chess, poker, backgammon, and real estate investment. I also write novels, which you are all required to buy. Brain surgery. Speaking of marrying creativity and business, I've discovered that a rock star and a brain surgeon have something in common. It's not that either one would be particularly good at the other's job, and I'm not sure which crossover would produce the more disastrous results, but rather that each one is capable of performing his craft brilliantly and generating huge sums of money without the need for any financial skills. In most businesses, before you can start earning big bucks, you have to be pretty well schooled in how the business works. For example, if you open up a shoe store, you have to work up a budget, negotiate a lease, bargain for the price of the shoes, and so forth, all before you smell that first foot. But in entertainment, as in surgery, you can soar to the top without any business expertise. Making a living from a business you don't understand is risky. Yet a large number of artists, including major ones, have never learned such basics as how record royalties are computed, what a copyright is, how music publishing works, and a number of other things that directly affect their lives. They don't know this stuff because A, their time was better spent making music, B, they weren't interested, C, it sounded too complicated, and or D, learning it was too much like being in school. But without knowing these basics, it's impossible for them to understand the different aspects of their professional lives. And as their success grows and their lives get more complex, they get even more lost. While it's true that some artists refuse to even listen to business talk, I've watched them go into sensory shutdown if you so much as mention the topic, others get very interested and study every detail of their business lives. The vast majority, however, are somewhere in the middle. They don't really enjoy business, but they want to participate intelligently in their career decisions. These artists are smart enough to know one simple thing: no one ever takes as good care of your business as you do. It was for my moderately to seriously interested clients that I developed a way to explain the basics in simple, everyday language. With only a small investment of time, these clients understood the essential concepts, and everyone enjoyed the process, including me. It also made an enormous difference in the artist's self-confidence about his or her business life, and allowed them to make valuable contributions to the process. Because the results of these learning sessions were so positive, several clients asked if we could explore the subjects more deeply, thus the conception of this book. I had just finished teaching my class on the music biz at USC and realized that my class notes were the outline of a book. So after some more research to flesh it out, I sat down and knocked out the first edition. The book is designed to give you a general overview of the music industry. You can listen to it as casually or intensely as suits your interest level, attention span, and pain tolerance. It's not written for lawyers or technicians, so it doesn't include the minutiae you'll find in a textbook for professionals. Instead, it gives you a broad overview of each segment of the industry, then goes into enough detail for you to understand the major issues you're likely to confront. Jungle Maps. When I was in high school, a policeman named Officer Sparks spoke at an assembly. Mr. Sparks hyped us on the life of a crime fighter, seeming sure we all secretly wanted to be cops. In the process, he showed us something I'll never forget. Officer Sparks ran a film in which the camera moved down a street. It was a grainy black-and-white movie, only about 30 seconds long, filmed by a camera bobbing along a sidewalk. When it was finished, he asked if we'd seen anything unusual. No one had. Apart from a couple of people bouncing in and out of the doorways, it looked pretty much like pictures taken by a camera walking past a row of boring shops. Mr. Sparks then said that a trained observer who watched the film could spot six crimes being committed. He showed the film again and pointed out each of the incidents. There was a quiet exchange of drugs, a pickpocket, etc. This time, the crimes were obvious, and I felt like a doofus for missing them. Anytime I learn a new skill, I go through a similar process. At first, things either look deceptively simple or like a bewildering blur of chaos. But as I learn what to look for, I see a world I never knew was there. From my experience, the best way to become a trained observer is to have a guide to the basics, a framework in which to organize the bits and pieces. So that's the purpose of this book, to be a map through the jungle and show you where the crimes are. Officer Sparks, if you're out there somewhere, I hope you're proud. Details. There is no way one book, even one filling several volumes, could poke into every nook and cranny of a business as complicated as the music business. So the purpose here is to give you the big picture, not all the details. Besides, for some of those details, I charge serious money. Also, even if I tried to lay out all the little pieces, as fast as everything moves in this biz, it would be obsolete within a few months. So the goal is to give you a broad overview, which doesn't change nearly as quickly, or at least it didn't until this edition. The idea is to give you a bare tree on which to hang the leaves of your own experience. Oddly, it's easier to pick up the details from the internet, gossip at cocktail parties, etc., than it is to learn the structural overview, because few people have the time or patience to sit down and give it to you. In fact, giving you the overall view turned out to be a much bigger job than I thought when I started. But you're worth it. Some results. Since this is the 10th edition, I now have feedback from experiments using this book on actual human subjects. Of all the responses I got, I thought you might enjoy hearing about two in particular. First, I received an irate call from a music lawyer who was upset because he charged thousands of dollars to give clients the advice I had put in the book. Second, I received an equally irate call from a manager who said that most of the artists he'd approached kept pushing my book in his face. Way to go. Keep shoving. And if you'll permit me a momentary lapse of modesty, my favorite compliment was from someone who said this was the first book he'd ever finished in his life. Staple, spindle, and mutilate. When you listen through this book, Forget everything you learned as a kid about taking good care of books, treating them as sacred works of art, etc. Listen to this book with a pencil in your hand. Make note of passages you think you'll need, whatever helps. This is an action book, a set of directions on how to jog through the music biz without getting mugged. So treat it like a comfortable old pair of shoes that you don't mind getting dirty. It doesn't matter what they look like, as long as they get you where you're going. Choose your own adventure. When my sons, David, Josh, and Jordan, were little, their favorite books were from a series called Choose Your Own Adventure. They work like this. You start reading the book on page one, and after a few pages, the author gives you a choice. For example, if you want Pinocchio to go down the alley, you turn to page 14. But if you want him to go to school, you turn to page 19. My boys never picked school. From there, every few pages you have more choices, and there are several different endings to the book. The boys like the ending where everyone gets killed, but that's another story. These books are not meant to be read or listened to straight through. If you tried, you'd find yourself crashing into different plots and stories. Instead, you're supposed to skip around, following a new path each time. This concept gave me the idea of how to organize this book. You have a choice of listening for a broad overview or listening in depth, and the book tells you where to skip ahead if you want to do this. However, unlike the Choose Your Own Adventure books, you can listen straight through with little or no damage to the central nervous system. Here's how it's organized. Part 1 deals with how to put together a team to guide your career, consisting of a personal manager, business manager, agent, and attorney. Part 2 looks at record deals, including the concepts of royalties, advances, and other deal points. Part 3 talks about songwriting and publishing, including copyrights and the structure of the publishing industry, as well as a section on protecting your name from people who want to pirate it. Part 4 explores things you'll need to know if you're a group. Part 5 deals with concerts and touring, including agreements for personal appearances and the role of your various team members in the process. Part 6, on merchandising, tells you how to profit from plastering your face on posters, t-shirts, and other junk. Parts 7 and 8 explore classical music and motion pictures. They're the last sections because you need to understand all the other concepts before we can tackle them. Now, to choosing your adventure. You have 4 mouth-watering ways to go through this book. 1. Extremely fast track. If you really want a quick trip, then A. Listen to part 1 on how to pick a team of advisors. B. Get people who know what they're doing. C. Let them do it. D. Use this audiobook to impress your friends. And E. Say hi to me backstage at one of your concerts. 2. Fast track. Short of this radical approach, if you want a broad strokes overview of the business without much detail, skip ahead each time you hear the fast track directions. 3. Advanced overview. If you want a more in-depth look, but less than the full shot, then follow the advanced overview directions. This will give you a solid overview, plus some detail on each topic. 4. Expert track. For you high achievers who want an in-depth discussion, simply listen straight through. Feel free to mix and match any of these tracks. If a particular topic grabs your interest, keep listening and check out the details. Amazingly, topics that grab your interest tend to be things currently happening in your life. If another topic is a yawn, fast track through it. So, let's get going. Everybody starts with part 1. Part 1. Your team of advisors. Chapter 2. How to pick a team. Getting your team together. Let's talk about the professionals you'll need to maximize your career and net worth. The main players are your 1. Personal manager, 2. Attorney, 3. Business manager, 4. Agency, 5. Groupies. With respect to number 5, you're pretty much on your own. As to the others, let's take a look. Business philosophy. Before we talk about these specific players, let me share a bit of personal philosophy. If share is too California for you, try, let me tell you some of my personal philosophy. Or the New York equivalent, yo, listen up, I'm talking to you. Take a hard look at some facts. 1. You are a business. Even though your skills are creative, you're capable of generating multi-millions of dollars, so you have to think of yourself as a business. 2. Most artists don't like business. This is not to say you aren't good at it. Some artists are unbelievably astute in business. However, those folks are the minority, and whatever their love and skill for business, their love and skill for creating and performing are much bigger. So even if you've got the chops to handle your own business, it's not the best use of your time. 3. Success hides a multitude of sins. This is true in any business, from making widgets to making music. If you're successful, you can get away with sloppy operations that would bankrupt you if times were bad. For example, putting all your pals on the payroll, buying lots of non-income producing assets, such as houses, jets, and other things that cost you money to maintain, as well as an overindulgence in various legal and illegal goodies, can easily result in a crash and burn if your income takes even a small dip, much less a nosedive. You can make more money by cutting costs than you can by earning more income. See the end of chapter 23 for proof of this. So the time to operate efficiently is now, not later. 4. Your career is going to have a limited run. Don't take offense at this. Limited can mean anything from a year to 50 years, but it's going to be limited. In most other careers, you can expect to have a professional life of 40 years plus, but as an entertainer in the music business, this rarely happens. And the road is strewn with carcasses of aging rock stars who work for rent money on nostalgia tours. So take the concentrated earnings of a few years and spread them over a 40-year period, and you'll find that two things happen. A, the earnings don't look quite as impressive, and B, this money may have to last you the rest of your life. It's certainly possible to have a long, healthy career, and to the extent you do, the need for caution diminishes radically. However, even the best entertainers have slumps, and very few have really long careers. So it's best to plan as if your career isn't going to last, then be pleasantly surprised if it does. Setting yourself up so that you never have to work doesn't have to stop you from working all you like. It just becomes an option, not an obligation. Hiring a team. The way you pick your professional team will either set up your career and finances for life or assure you a place on the next Electric Prunes tour. So be very careful and pay attention personally to the process of assembling them. I know you don't like to deal with this stuff, but it's your career and your money, and you have to do it every now and then. If you pick the right people, you can set your life on automatic pilot and just check up on it periodically. If you pick the wrong people and set it on automatic pilot, you'll smash into a mountain before you know what happened. Pre-team strategies. Since you wouldn't open a store without something to sell, before you start assembling a team, you want to be sure your music is ready for the big time. And how do you know when it's ready? You ask your tummy. Do you believe in your gut that your music has matured to the point that you're ready for a professional career? If the answer is yes, then you're ready. Tummies are reliable indicators. Once we learn how to listen to them and dismiss the goblins that yell, "You're a phony and nobody wants you." Even the superstars have these goblins. They've just learned to ignore them. The first thing is to record your music. The recording doesn't have to be expensive or elaborate. With the advent of relatively inexpensive computer software, you can get a very professional sound in your bedroom. The important thing is to capture your energy, enthusiasm, and drive. You know what I mean. A word about what kind of music to make. It's simple. You make the music that moves your soul. No one has ever had a serious career by imitating others or trying to guess what the public wants. And I'll tell you a secret. What the public wants is someone whose music resonates from their heart. Doesn't matter whether you're the commercial flavor of the month or an obscure blend of reggae and Buddhist chants. All the superstars I've known have a clear vision of who they are and what their music is. Okay, you got your music. How do you get a fan base, besides your mom? A lot of artists start by playing whatever local gigs they can get. This is not only to attract fans, but also to tighten up your musical chops and get experience playing live. When you do this, get your fans to sign up for your email list at every show. It's crucial to build a database, as we'll discuss in a minute, and a lot of artists give away something as an incentive to build one. For example, everyone who signs up gets a pin or sticker. Even if you only add a few new folks at each gig, you can eventually build a following that helps spread the word about your music and grow itself virally, assuming your music doesn't suck. You can then organize the list using FanBridge, MailChimp, or a similar service. Another way to add to your database is by giving a free song to anyone who signs on to your email list for the first time. There's software to capture email addresses in exchange for songs at places like Cash Music, www.cashmusic.org, FanBridge, www.fanbridge.com, and Bandcamp, https://bandcamp.com. Of the three, Cash Music has the advantage of being open source and free, as it's based on the principle that everyone donates resources and uses the platform to help other artists. You can also offer a song in exchange for a fan post on Twitter using Tweet for a Track, www.tweetforatrack.com. And check out blogs like Hypebot for the latest and greatest DIY marketing and promotional tools in real time. The idea is to build a fan list that you own. The list of fans who follow you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. are owned and controlled by Silicon Valley folks, not by you, which means they control if and how you can reach them. Once you have a list, stay in touch with your fans on a regular basis. Direct them to your sites on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Medium, Bandcamp, Instagram, etc., as well as your own website. Promote yourself through email or texting. I'm told there are some services that manage mass texting, though I don't have any experience with them. When you contact fans, have something interesting to say, and the more personal you make it, the better. Which of these would hit you harder? 1. We're playing in Schenectady tonight. Or 2. Hey, Clarence, did you know we're in town tonight? Come see us. Assuming your name is Clarence and you live in Schenectady, otherwise it's not quite as effective. Another way that artists engage fans is to run a contest. For example, if fans retweet or share a post about one of your shows, they can enter a drawing for free tickets. That makes your promotion easily shareable and viral by nature. Technically, there could be some issues with the laws that govern sweepstakes, lotteries, and things like that, but artists do quite a lot of this, and I'm not aware of anyone getting hassled for small-scale stuff. Note, the key word in the prior sentence is aware. Sweepstake laws are way outside of my wheelhouse, so don't take my word on it. You should talk to your lawyer if you're going to do this. I'm told Patreon, https://www.patreon.com, can be useful in creating a relationship with your most hardcore fans and developing revenue opportunities with those folks. The key is, A, to create unique opportunities for your fans. Maybe they get a free ticket if they buy one, a chance to meet you after a gig, or you volunteer to help clean their garage. Well, maybe not the last one. And B, to create unique content, such as exclusive video chats, access to new recordings, or exclusive videos of you in the studio. However you handle it, make sure you're giving as much as you're getting, so the fans don't feel ripped off. Also, it's important that what you give away or sell them is consistent with your image, so don't come off like Chuck E. Cheese. When you send out blasts to your database, don't be afraid to tell your fans what you want them to do. For example, tell them to come to a show with a friend. Ask fans to tweet at clubs saying they want to see you. Encourage fans to listen to you on Spotify to increase your play count numbers. Ask them to tell their friends about your music. Write to bloggers and Spotify playlist curators and offer them an exclusive premiere of an unreleased track. And speaking of bloggers, it's important for you to personally write them. A lot of bloggers love to hear from artists who genuinely like their blog. Insincere kissing up doesn't work unless you're really good at it. If you can connect, try to cultivate a genuine relationship. Send music early. Offer to put them on your guest list at shows. Help clean their garage. Still kidding about that one. I've been told, but have no experience with this, that SubmitHub, www.submithub.com, is another way to get music to the bloggers, though there's a charge for it. If you're big enough to have a publicist, they can sometimes help with bloggers. But tastemakers usually know that those folks are getting paid to pitch your music. While blogs might be a bit less relevant than they were a few years ago, because fans are looking more to playlists to find new music, the blogs are still important. And if you're featured on one, you can add that to your press kit, which you can send to promoters, the people who book live gigs, streaming services, record companies, garage cleaners, and so forth. You can get free basic data from Facebook Insights, Google Analytics, and Spotify Artist Insights. And when you get that data, it can put your booking strategy on steroids. For example, you'll be able to see where your fans are clustered, so you can strategically target those markets rather than just booking gigs in East Bumbleton and hoping the farmers show up. Another great way to build visibility is by getting your songs placed on TV shows or in commercials. Sites like Music Dealers, www.musicdealers.com, Pump Audio, www.pumpaudio.com, Jingle Punks, www.jinglepunks.com, Secret Road, www.secretroad.com, and Zynk, Z-Y-N-C, www.zynkmusic.com, can help with that. A sincere email to these folks is a great way to start, and it's worth some homework to find out who's the key person at each organization. Since they get a lot of these emails, try to differentiate yourself from the masses by pointing out something you've got going. I've got 100,000 followers on Instagram. Or, if there isn't much happening, mention something about the person you're writing to. I saw you recently got an award for your sponge collection. Congrats! If they do bite, you won't likely get much money for the use of your recording, but you'll spread your music to a wider base. If by some fluke you land a really big use, you still may not get much money up front, but you can earn some decent songwriter monies from airplay of the TV show or commercial. These are called performance royalties, which we'll discuss in Chapter 16. If you're a writer, this kind of activity can get you noticed by a music publisher, who may give you money for your songs. We'll talk about publishers in Chapter 16, but essentially, they handle the business of songwriters, as opposed to the business of recording artists. In the meantime, sign up for an organization like SongTrust, who will collect music publishing income on your behalf. This is critical to have in place when you land such placements. You'll also need to affiliate with a performing rights organization, which we'll talk about in Chapter 16. If you get noticed by a tastemaker, an important blogger, journalist, radio station, etc., be sure to say thanks. You can do it on social media, but try something else to make your thanks unique. For example, instead of email, call call them on the phone. That's what people did in the old days before texting. Or send a handwritten card. Or mail them a piece of Tupperware with the word "thanks" written on the lid. This kind of follow-up not only builds goodwill with the tastemaker, but it hopefully also spreads your name to their audience. And keep the tastemaker's info on file for future use to let them know what you're up to. Similarly, it can help expand your base if you're able to connect with other artists on Instagram or Twitter and start a Tweety Love Fest. Fans love to eavesdrop on artists talking shop, and you can also get exposed to their fans. Similarly, if you can get support from your videos and music via channels with large followings on YouTube and SoundCloud, you'll expose your music to an even wider audience that was handpicked by that channel. Reach out to these channels and try to start relationships. Offer them premieres and exclusive content, or to clean their garage. When you're more established, give your database fans a chance to hear your music ahead of everyone else. Tell them about a secret show or webcast. Let them have first crack at your tickets. Some bands do life casting, where they communicate with fans a number of times each day. For example, they might get on Facebook Live while headed to a gig, blast out backstage updates through Instagram or Twitter, send pictures and video teasers of themselves on stage through Instagram, forward videos of themselves in the bathtub with rubber duckies, etc. It's great if you can post every day on your social media, primarily Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, plus Snapchat if your fans are there. Mix up your posts, and don't use auto-share or posting programs because those put the same content everywhere. You want to engage your fans, not spam them with the exact same posts on all networks. There are obviously tons of additional ways to market yourself, so let your imagination take flight and go for it. A number of websites can help with marketing, both in terms of specific tools and general advice, but because I don't use them myself, I can't really recommend any particular one. Some of my friends have suggested Cash Music, Bandpage, Bandcamp, Hypebot, Digital Music News, and Mitem's blog. Of course, with all these techniques, be sure to stay on the right side of the line between keeping people intrigued and becoming the pushy egomaniac at the party. Back to a 40,000-foot view. Make sure you stay focused on creating your music as the first priority, with marketing as the second. Some people recommend that you spend no more than an hour a day on social networking / promotion, so that you don't use up all that creativity and have none of it left for your music. Others prefer going in streaks of posting and then holing up in the studio when they need to create, or mix and match. Okay, so you've got a killer recording and you're ready to boogie. Next question is whether you want to sign to a record company or do it yourself. We'll discuss later, in Chapter 7, whether you actually want to sign or not. But for now, let's assume you do. In this day and age, before a label will sign you, they expect you to have a decent-sized fan base and hopefully one or two other goodies in your story, like high streaming numbers on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Music, or YouTube, with a low skip rate, meaning people don't move to the next song a few seconds after yours starts, or positive words from an important tastemaker. And even after you've done that, and even though most labels have scouts monitoring the internet for hot new artists, unless a lot of people are going nuts over you, it's not likely anyone will call you out of the blue. As with most things in life, you gotta make it happen yourself. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a bit of a bummer. The major record companies, not so much the independents, don't listen to new artists' material unless they're submitted by someone in the business. It's usually a manager or attorney, though it could be an agent or a respected tastemaker. I hate delivering bad news, but look at the bright side. I just saved you 2 months of waiting for a form email that says they won't consider your stuff because it didn't come from someone in the biz. The reason is that record companies can get more than 1,000 submissions per week, so restricting who can send in material is one way to regulate the floodgates. However, it's also a catch-22. How can you get your music heard if you're not already connected in the business? And how do you get connected in the business if you can't get heard? Don't despair. I'm going to give you the key to the door. Namely, the key is to get yourself a lawyer or manager to shop your music, which leads nicely into our next topic. Who's on first? The first person on your team is almost always a manager or a lawyer. In your baby stages, the manager is not likely to be someone in the business. It's more likely a friend or relative with a lot of enthusiasm. While this can be a major plus, as we'll discuss in more detail when we talk about managers at the beginning of Chapter 3, it may or may not get your music to the record companies. So if you have an inexperienced manager, or if you have no manager at all, a music industry lawyer can really help. Record companies prefer to deal with people they know, meaning your music will get heard much faster and by more important people if it's submitted by an industry lawyer. It's much easier to get a music lawyer than a manager. Why? Because the time required of a lawyer is minimal compared to the time a manager has to devote. The manager is expected to help you with songs, image, bookings, babysitting, you, not the kiddies, etc. But the lawyer only has to spend a few hours getting people to check out your music. It's the lawyer's relationships, not their time, that count. A word of caution about hiring a lawyer to shop your music. Most of the lawyers consider it important to maintain their credibility with the record companies, so they'll only shop artists they really believe in. Unfortunately, there are a few who will shop anything that walks in the door as long as they get paid a fee. Being shopped by one of these slime bags is no better than sending the music yourself, and maybe worse, because the record companies know these lawyers don't screen out any of the garbage, so their clients' music goes to the bottom of the pile. To prevent your music from being thrown out with the tuna cans, you should carefully check out the references of any lawyer you're considering. Ask them for the names of people whose music they've shopped, both successfully and unsuccessfully, so they don't just give you the few success stories that slipped through the cracks. Then contact the references and find out how it went. You can also check around other industry sources to see who's legit. We'll talk more about checking references later on. You'll of course need a lawyer and manager, even if you don't go the record company route, and the criteria for hiring them, which we'll discuss in the next chapters, is exactly the same. A business manager, the person who collects your money, writes your checks, oversees investments, etc., is usually the last on board, for the opposite reason of why the lawyer is first. It's expensive, in terms of staffing and labor, for a business manager to take you on, and new artists need a lot of work just to keep financially afloat. Another reason they come on last is that very few business managers are willing to take a flyer with a totally unproven, unsigned artist. The business manager's potential upside is not nearly as great as a personal manager's or agent's, but they have to run up substantial expenses from the beginning. As you'll see in Chapter 4, business managers aren't paid as much as agents or personal managers. But don't sweat it. Until you have some decent money coming in, you don't need a full-fledged business manager. A good accountant can take care of your tax returns and answer basic questions. The search. Where do you find warm bodies to begin assembling your team? Well, start with the age-old ploy of asking every human being you know for a recommendation. Talk to people involved in music, even if it's only your high school choir's piano accompanist. You can lead yourself into any unknown area by diligently following your nose, and the music business is no exception. You'll be amazed how many things fall into your life when you open yourself up to the possibilities. The only frustrating part is that the people you really want don't have time for you in the beginning. Be assured, as soon as you're successful, they'll fall all over you and say they knew it all along. The major players are almost all in Los Angeles and New York, with a good number in Nashville, though of course that leans heavily to country. I don't mean to say there aren't qualified people in other places, there most certainly are, but the music industry is centered in these three towns, and the people who live there usually have more experience. On the other hand, major managers are increasingly popping up in other places. For example, I've dealt with managers of world-class artists who live in Atlanta, Austin, Vancouver, Philadelphia, and Boston. However, the better ones spend a lot of time on airplanes visiting Los Angeles, New York, and/or Nashville. Here are some specific suggestions for building your list. 1. All Access. There's a website called www.allaccess.com that has a pretty comprehensive online directory of people in the music biz. I'm told it's updated often, and it has the major advantage of being free. You'll need to register for the site. Don't be intimidated by the radio station questions. Anybody can register. Then click on Industry Directory. 2. Hits Magazine. Hits is the mad magazine of the music biz. It's full of current news and gossip, reported with a college humor magazine style, and is very funny reading. www.hitsdailydouble.com. 3. Billboard Magazine. Billboard is an industry trade magazine with lots of news, interviews, charts, and other goodies. www.billboard.biz. Note the .biz ending. Billboard.com is consumer-oriented, while .biz is for the industry. By no means are these three an exhaustive list of sources. They just happen to be the ones that first came to mind. Frankly, I've been doing this long enough to know everybody I need to get to, and I don't use references on a routine basis. So don't take my suggestions as gospel. Check the internet for more sources. Here's some more ideas for developing your list of potential team members. 1. Read interviews with industry figures online and in music publications, and note the names. In addition to the industry sources earlier mentioned, here's some major consumer publications, meaning they're geared to fans, as opposed to trade publications that are geared to business people, in alphabetical order. A. Music Connection, www.musicconnection.com. B. Spin, www.spin.com. C. Pitchfork, www.pitchfork.com. D. Rolling Stone, www.rollingstone.com. B. Vibe, www.vibe.com. 2. Watch for quotes, stories, or blurbs about music industry people online, on radio, and on TV. 3. Try these online places. Taxi, www.taxi.com. Music Business Registry, www.musicregistry.com. Record Express, www.recordexpress.net. And Songwriter 101, www.songwriter101.com. 4. Some artists list the names of their professionals, together with their jobs, on their websites, on the info page of Facebook, or in tour programs. 5. Or simply Google artists you respect, together with manager or agent, to find out who's behind the magic. Using all this and anything else you can think of, write down the names and develop a hit list. Just keep moving forward. Follow any lead that seems promising. Once you assemble a bunch of names, prioritize who you want to contact first. If you've heard any names from two or more sources, the odds are you are on to a person who is somebody, and he or she should move up in priority. Also, look for the professionals surrounding people whose music you admire and whose style is similar to yours. While this is less critical with lawyers and business managers, it's important to make sure that agencies, and especially personal managers, handle your kind of music. For example, the agent who books Wayne Newton is not likely to book Lil Wayne, and I guarantee you they have different managers. On the other hand, you may be surprised to find that acts just as diverse are represented by the same agency, with very different individual agents. And the legal and business management lives of different artists are a lot alike. Rock and rollers like Green Day, the Rolling Stones, etc., rappers like Kanye, Jay-Z, Kendrick Lamar, etc., and divas like Adele, Beyoncé, Barbara Streisand, etc., all have similar needs in music publishing, record royalties, touring, merchandising, sponsorship, etc. Once you've prioritized your list, start trying to contact the people on it. It's always better to come in through a recommendation, friend of the family, etc., even if it's only the person's dry cleaner. But if you can't find any contact, start cold. You can try calling people on the phone, but expect a lot of unreturned phone calls, or at best, to be shuffled off to an underling. That's okay. Talk to the underling. If you get someone on the phone, be brief and to the point, because these folks are always in a hurry. It's a good idea to rehearse your rap with a friend in advance. You can try emailing folks with a story about yourself and a link to your music, or maybe attach an MP3 file. Again, be short and straightforward. Good people are always busy, and you'll be lucky to get 5 seconds of their attention. If you can't grab them fast, you're off to the digital trash bin. Repeated emails to the same person help get their attention, and may even have the subliminal effect of making your name sound familiar if anyone ever asks. But it can also be annoying and get your name into their spam filter, so don't overdo it. You could use that old-fashioned thing you may remember, the U.S. mail. Since so few people do that anymore, a physical letter might even get more attention. In this case, include a CD or a USB stick, pictures, $100 bills, and anything else to distinguish yourself. I once had someone send me a recording stuffed inside a rubber chicken. For real. If you've gotten any local press, that's a good thing to add. Use a yellow highlighter so they don't have to search the page for where you are. And just like the emails, be short and sweet, or you're off to the round file. However you approach it, expect a lot of unanswered emails and unacknowledged letters. Don't get discouraged. If you successfully snag someone's attention and they politely, or not so politely, blow you off, ask who they would recommend. This is valuable for 2 reasons. First, you've got a lead from someone who's actually in the industry. Second, when you reach out to the recommended person, you can tell them, so-and-so told you to contact them. If so-and-so is a big enough name, it should at least get your email or phone call returned. Maybe. Someone, somewhere, will nibble, and you can parlay it into real interest by being persistent. All the superstars I've known have heaping helpings of drive, and they'll continually hound people to further their careers. So hang in there and keep following up, despite the discouragements thrown in front of you. Virtually every record company in America passed on Taylor Swift, The Beatles, and Elton John. So don't expect people to be any smarter about your music. And don't get discouraged. It only takes one enthusiastic person to get the ball rolling. Screening the sharks. So you've honed your list, run up hours of chasing people, and hopefully found 2 or 3 nibbles on your line. At this point, you should fly, drive, bus, or hitchhike to meet these people in their natural habitat. You can't tell everything from a phone call. You want to see their body language, meet their associates, see if they work out of a dog kennel, etc. Basically, use your instincts to feel how they vibe you, and don't be afraid to trust your gut. If you think you're meeting with a piece of slime, you probably are. But if they dazzle you, be even more cautious. Charming crooks are the most dangerous. The fact that someone works with a lot of big names is helpful, but not a final determination. There have been a lot of big names associated with disasters over the years. Here's a bit of personal history to illustrate. When we first got married, my wife and I decided to buy a vacuum cleaner. For reasons I still don't understand, we called a door-to-door salesman. This buzz-cut, square-jawed man bounced into the house and showed us how the vacuum's suction could pick up a 7-pound metal ball. Then Buzz poured some blue gunk on our carpet and used the vacuum nozzle to slurp it up. Finally, he started bragging about how he'd sold vacuum cleaners to the wives of several celebrities and started rattling off a list of big names. At this point, I said, "Excuse me, but do these people know anything about vacuum cleaners?" The point is, as I'm sure you see, is that a big-name celebrity isn't necessarily a good recommendation. It may just mean the celebrity pays no attention to his or her business, or that the celebrity is an imbecile. So how do you protect yourself? Like this. References. Have the potential team member give you references, and check them out carefully. In asking for references, it's important to get people at your level of success. The fact that someone takes good care of their biggest client doesn't mean he or she will give you the same attention, or even have the time to take care of you. Odd as it seems, some people don't even pay much attention to their big-name clients, usually because they're too busy. There's an old joke, based on truth, about a major artist who couldn't get his lawyer on the phone to fire him. Also, try to get the reference from someone who's been using this professional for a while, so you don't just get a report on their honeymoon period. Although it may seem obvious, be sure the professional's expertise is in music. There are brilliant real estate accountants who would be lost in the music business, just as the opposite is true. In fact, even people with extensive film, television, or book expertise may not understand music. So be sure you're talking to someone who does. Use your other team members. You should consult the other members of your team anytime you hire someone. First, you want their input and suggestions, and second, these people have to work together, so you want to be sure you're hiring someone who can get along with the team. But beware of this. Benjamin Franklin once said, and I'm too lazy to look up the exact quote, so I'll paraphrase it, that when you gather a group of people for their collective wisdom, you also gather their collective prejudices and hidden agendas. In other words, there will almost always be a political reason why your other team members want something, and this may or may not coincide with your best interests. For example, a business manager might have just referred a very important client to a personal manager. The personal manager may therefore be pushing you toward this particular business manager in order to pay back the favor, regardless of whether the business manager is right for your situation. I don't mean to make you paranoid. Most people are ethical and won't recommend someone unless they genuinely believe he or she would be the best person for the job, even if it's a payback. But a great deal of politicking goes on in the music business, just like any other business, and you should be aware of it, particularly because we're a small business and deal with each other so much. So always ask people why they're making a recommendation, rather than just the bottom line of who you should use. Make them give you specific, factual reasons. Facts are something you can evaluate yourself, and you should make the final decision. Look beyond the sales pitch. Everybody looks great when they're selling. When you interview someone, all the seller's attention is focused on you, and you are absolutely the most important creature on the planet. That's almost never the case when you actually get down to business. The realities of other people's needs take their toll. It's extremely difficult to know this in your first meeting, as giving good interview can take people very far in their professions. So how do you protect yourself from this? Once again, you have to check their references very carefully. Ask the references about their experience of working with this person, such as whether they quickly return phone calls and emails, how fast he or she gets work done, what's their zodiac sign, etc. It's a good idea to make a list of questions in advance so you don't forget anything. Don't be lulled by promises that sound unbelievably fantastic. If they sound too good to be true, they probably aren't. Some people will promise things they can't possibly deliver, just to get the job. They figure you won't fire them when they don't come through, because they know most artists don't like to make changes in their lives. These are the same people who will stop returning calls if your star fades. They also figure they have to lie just to ace out the next guy, who they assume is also lying to you. The truth is that there are no real miracle workers.